Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
With Renault's award-winning hybrid and full electric lineup, where style meets tech. Rethink Renault.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll look back at 50 years of Apple. The highs, the lows, and the devices that quite literally changed everything. As always, you can email the show, techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Later in the show, I'll answer your tech questions. But if you're listening to Pat this morning, you'll have heard us chat and review the new S26 Ultra, the Google Pixel 10a, and talk about an Apple laptop that looks set to change the laptop game. It's called the MacBook Neo, and it's really putting it up to other device manufacturers with the price point, the spec, and the beauty of Apple products. And that beauty is something that is always featured in the story of Apple. This month marks 50 years since the company was founded, and we're going to start this week with a look back at the story of Apple. It all starts, as you probably know, with two Steves, Jobs and Wozniak. And there's a third name that's often forgotten, Ronald Wayne. In April 1976, the three of them form Apple Computer Company. Wozniak is the genuine technical brain. He's building computers because he loves it. He's showing his designs to the Homebrew Computer Club just to see if they'll impress other engineers.
A club started up, and this club was based on microprocessors. I didn't know anything about them at first. I've been working at Hewlett-Packard on calculators for years. This little microprocessor is like the little guts of a computer, one chip. I've already got the machine that displays words from a computer on the screen and a keyboard that types to a computer. Why don't I make this little microprocessor chip my own local computer? And a little bit of memory to make it work, and the right kind of memory, dynamic memory. But as a good designer, I always believed in few parts, and it was the cheapest memory that saved the parts, that was going to replace other types of magnetic memory. So made a lot of right decisions and built this. I designed this machine.
Jobs isn't an engineer in the traditional sense, but he spots something Wozniak doesn't: that this stuff could be packaged, sold, and scaled. Their first product, the Apple One, is essentially a circuit board. There's no screen, no keyboard, no casing. It's sold to hobbyists and they move a couple of hundred units at most. Ronald Wayne, who's older and more risk-averse, sells his stake almost immediately. In hindsight, it's probably one of the worst business decisions in tech history. But at the time, Apple is just three lads with a project. Things change quickly with the Apple II.
Using an Apple II is very easy. The only hard part is getting your kid away from it. You see, Apples are the leading computers in schools, so even though you bought it to help you work at home, your kid will want to use it for his own homework. Of course, if all else fails, there's one last thing you can try. Get him an Apple of his own.
Released in 1977, it's one of the first personal computers that normal people in homes, schools, and small businesses can actually use. It has colour graphics, it's relatively approachable, and crucially, it runs the first proper spreadsheet. That single piece of software turns the Apple II into a serious business machine. By the end of the 1970s, Apple is growing fast. In 1980, it goes public and suddenly it's a major company. Steve Jobs is 25 and super wealthy. But from early on, there's a tension inside Apple between engineers who want freedom and Jobs who wants control of design, of messaging, of how the product looks and feels. That tension explodes in the early 1980s. Jobs becomes obsessed with the idea that computers should be intuitive, not just powerful, but friendly. Apple launches the Lisa in 1983 and then the Macintosh in 1984.
Today we celebrate the first glorious anniversary of the information purification practice. We have created, for the first time in all history, a garden of pure ideology.
The Mac introduces a graphical interface and a mouse to the mass market. It's genuinely revolutionary, but it's also expensive and underpowered.
You've just seen some pictures of Macintosh. Now I'd like to show you Macintosh in person. All of the images you are about to see on the large screen will be generated by what's in that bag.
Hello, I'm Macintosh. It sure is great to get out of that bag. And accustomed as I am to public speaking, I'd like to share with you a maxim I thought of the first time I met an IBM mainframe. Never trust a computer you can't with. Obviously, I can talk, but right now, I'd like to sit back and listen. So it is with considerable pride that I introduce a man who's been like a father to me, Steve Jobs.
At the same time, Jobs is becoming difficult to work with. He clashes with executives, teams, and eventually with the CEO he hired himself, John Sculley. In 1985, Jobs loses a power struggle and leaves Apple.
Woz and I started Apple in my parents' garage when I was 20. We worked hard, and in 10 years, Apple had grown from just the two of us in a garage into a $2 billion company with over 4,000 employees. We just released our finest creation, the Macintosh, a year earlier, and I'd just turned 30. And then I got fired. How can you get fired from a company you started? Well, as Apple grew, we hired someone who I thought was very talented to run the company with me. And for the first year or so, things went well. But then our visions of the future began to diverge, and eventually we had a falling out. When we did, our board of directors sided with him. And so at 30, I was out, and very publicly out.
This is a crucial moment in the story because Apple without Jobs doesn't collapse immediately, but it does lose its identity.
Financial difficulties, layoffs, buyout rumors. It's enough to make the most loyal of computer users a little skittish. Once a mighty giant in the industry, now Apple computers are given little shelf space in most stores.
I've always grown up around IBM compatibles. My dad had one. And
IBM, I was familiar with it. I knew how to move it. You could expand on it a little bit more.
Many see buying Apple's Macintosh as too limiting. In a sea of software at most stores, only a few titles will run on a Mac. That's one of the reasons IBM and all of its clones own 90% of the market. But the other 10% are extremely loyal, almost religious about their Macs.
That part of the Mac is what has kept the product alive. I mean, Mac users, when they buy a machine, they bought it 10 years ago, they keep upgrading. They're very loyal.
Macintosh Systems and Peripherals of Minneapolis sells Apple computers, but owner Michael Bardis admits the company has made mistakes.
The decision that they made that was wrong, I believe, is that they came out with too many computers. And they made it really tricky on the consumers to figure out what computer they need to buy.
Over the next decade, Apple releases lots of products, but very few great ones. The company is profitable at times, but it's confused. There are too many models, no clear strategy, and Microsoft Windows steadily takes over the personal computer market. By the mid-1990s, Apple is in real trouble. People openly speculate about whether or not it can survive. Meanwhile, Jobs is doing two things after Apple. First, he starts Next. It fails commercially, but the software it develops is quietly excellent. Second, he buys a small animation studio from George Lucas, which becomes Pixar. That ends up making him a billionaire and builds his reputation back up outside of Apple. In 1996, Apple makes a move that saves the company. It buys Next. The headline reason is software. Apple desperately needs a modern operating system. But the unspoken reason is Steve Jobs. He's brought back into the organization initially as an advisor, but within a year, he's effectively in charge again.
Well, Apple was about 90 days away from going bankrupt back then, in the early days. And it was much worse than I thought when I went back initially.
This second Jobs era is very different from the first. He slashes the product line, kills dozens of half-finished ideas, and focuses Apple on a small number of very clear products. In 1998, the iMac launches. Colorful, all-in-one, and unapologetically different. It sells extremely well and rebrands Apple almost overnight.
This is iMac. The whole thing is translucent. You can see into it. It's so cool. We've got stereo speakers on the front. We've got infrared right up here. We've got the CD-ROM drive right in the middle. We've got dual stereo headphone jacks. We got the coolest mouse on the planet right here. Come on around. All of the connectors are inside one beautiful little door here, the Ethernet, the USB stuff. Around the back, we've got a really great handle here. The back of this thing looks better than the front of the other guys, by the way. And then around the side. So let's take one more swing around it so you can see. This is what it looks like. And again, you've got to see one of these things in person.
But the real turning point comes in the early 2000s when Apple stops thinking of itself as purely a computer company. In 2001, it launches the iPod. Players already exist, but they're fiddly and badly designed. The iPod isn't. It works smoothly with iTunes, which Apple had already introduced earlier that year. 2 years later, Apple launches the iTunes Music Store, offering individual songs legally for a small fee. That moves Apple directly into the center of the music industry and gives it something hugely valuable, a relationship with millions of customers who can now buy content through Apple, not just hardware. By the mid-2000s, Apple is flying. And then in 2007 comes a moment that defines not just modern tech, but modern life.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything. Apple's been very fortunate. It's been able to introduce a few of these into the world. Today, we're introducing three revolutionary products of this class. The first one is a widescreen iPod with touch controls. The second is a revolutionary mobile phone. And the third is a breakthrough internet communications device. So, three things. A widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod, a phone. Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
Yeah, that is Steve Jobs introducing the iPhone. And it's not the first smartphone, but it's the first one that feels coherent. One touchscreen, no stylus, software designed around how people actually use their hands and eyes. When Apple opens the App Store a year later, it creates an entire ecosystem and an entire economy around that device. From this point on, the iPhone dominates Apple's business. It generates most of the company's revenue and becomes central to everyday life for hundreds of millions of people. Then in 2011, Steve Jobs passes away. This is another point where people expect Apple to struggle. Jobs isn't just a CEO, he's a symbol of the company, as iconic as the Apple logo itself. But what's less talked about is that Jobs spent years deliberately building Apple so that it wouldn't depend on him. Tim Cook takes over and the company quietly changes emphasis.
Good morning. This is my first product launch since being named CEO. I'm sure you didn't know that. And it is a pleasure to host you today. I love Apple, and I consider it the privilege of a lifetime to have worked here for almost 14 years, and I am very excited about this new role. I want to especially welcome you to this campus. This campus serves as a kind of second home for many of us. So it's sort of like inviting you into our home. In particular, I want to welcome you to this room that we call our town hall. This room, town hall, has quite a history at Apple. Just 10 years ago, we launched the original iPod here, and it went on to revolutionize the way we listen to music. And just 1 year ago, we launched the new MacBook Air, which has fundamentally changed the way people think about notebook computers. Today we'll remind you of the uniqueness of this company as we announce innovations from our mobile operating system to applications to services to hardware. And more importantly, the integration of all of these into a powerful, yet simple and integrated experience. It's an extraordinary time to be at Apple.
Under Cook, Apple becomes bigger, steadier, and more operationally focused. It expands into wearables with the Apple Watch, into audio with AirPods, and into services with Apple Music, Apple TV Plus, payment storage, and subscriptions. These don't replace the iPhone, but they reduce Apple's dependence on a single blockbuster product. By the time Apple launched its most recent iPhone in 2025, it was no longer just a hardware company. It is an ecosystem company. Phones, watches, laptops, services, all designed to lock together. And now in 2026, Apple is in a very different position from that 1976 garage startup. It's one of the most valuable companies in history. It designs its own chips, it runs its own software platform, and instead of chasing flashy reinventions every year, it's focused on longer arcs. AI baked into existing products, health technology, spatial computing, and tighter integration across devices people already own. Apple today isn't run by a showman, it's run by a supply chain expert. And that's not a criticism. It explains why the company looks the way it does now. Calmer, slower moving, but incredibly hard to dislodge. The common thread from the Apple One to the MacBook Neo isn't perfection or even originality. It's control. Control over design, control over how products work together, and control over the experience from start to finish. Yeah, that is the story of Apple. I would love to hear your experiences of Apple products if you've ever owned one. I remember back in the day getting my little paws on a blue iPod that had the clicky wheel. I could put a few thousand songs onto it. I had the white headphones and it was a real experience. I think I was a teenager. I must have been a teenager at the time, but it felt luxurious. Every element from the packaging to open the packaging to taking the white paper that used to be around the bits and pieces off, setting it up, having to have the specific iPod cable to connect to the computer, having to use iTunes. It was all very much controlled within that one ecosystem. But there's no denying it was a statement piece. Remember the ad of people walking around the streets with white headphones? It's how you knew they had an Apple product. The brilliance of the marketing as well as the products has to be appreciated. But I would love to know your thoughts and memories of Apple products as they mark their 50th anniversary. TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address. We'll be right back.